Good morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We are podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show whenever you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services, and you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. Later on in the program, Robert Knott is going to be with us, speaking of the arts. Right now, I'd like to welcome Giancarlo Esposito. He's an award-winning actor, and he's the director, producer, and one of the lead actors in the new movie that is screening at the Santa Fe Film Festival, Gospel Hill. It'll be screening tomorrow at 8 o'clock at the Scottish Rite Temple. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you here. This was the winner of the best film at the Fort Lauderdale Film Festival, and it's about people in a small southern town where a golf course is displacing people in an African-American neighborhood called Gospel Hill. You play the doctor who is selling out his neighbors, trying to make money in the real estate deal. Danny Glover plays this broken-spirited son of a civil rights leader who had died 40 years earlier in 1968, along with the other people who'd been assassinated. He's played by Samuel L. Jackson. And the murder was never solved by a white sheriff who did not try very hard to solve it. The sheriff's sons are still around. This is the setting for the whole thing. What was the genesis of the story?
The story came from a writer named Jeff Stacey, who brought the actual story to me and had twice as many characters in the script.
Really?
Yeah, it wasn't very focused. And I saw that there was an opportunity here to tell something very poignant and real that was reflective of our condition in society today. And also, it was a story about past and present. When I got the initial script, our civil rights leader was never seen in the story at all. He was just talked about. And I felt that in my heart we needed to see this man's journey and to sort of feel his energy, to know how he affected all the people that we're seeing in a contemporary basis. So I found a way to put him into the story so that we could see him and feel his journey in a stronger way.
So you have, it goes back and forth between the past, which is in black and white, and which is a combination of actual footage and the footage with Samuel L. Jackson and playing this murdered civil rights leader, and the present, which is shot in color. Basically the same town, and really basically the same conflict that's going on, people's land being taken away.
Exactly. I really wanted to be very cognizant of the fact that in our history, we repeat things. And even in our lives, we repeat certain things that we need to learn. If we don't get them the first time, we have an opportunity to look at them again a second time. And it was really important for me to, you know, in New York, when you're on your way to the airport, you're on the same road, and they build the whole road, and then they go back to the beginning, and they tear it up again and rebuild it. You know? So,
and history's kind of like that.
History's very much like that. And so I was really interested in how we come to really grow through our history and really come together as a people. And so the same issues that were going on 40 years ago when Paul Malcolm was assassinated are revisited in this town and are happening again. 40 years ago, it was the factories. It was the offer that all these warehouses and factories to supply stores would be workable and good and feasible and fantastic for the community, and that they should be put in the African-American community. This is what Paul Malcolm fought against. Not that they shouldn't be built, but that they should not be built on the poorest land in a very historical neighborhood. He fought that. He died for it. They were able to stop that at that time. And here we are 40 years later when Gospel Hill, the black section of town in the town of Julia, is facing the same kind of gentrification. But also, it could be good for the neighborhood. So there's these trade-offs that are made and talked about. So it was important for me to tell a story that was also in concert with the idea of change today. Because change 40 years ago, it was different than change today. Change today is really moving much faster. People are understanding each other in a different way. With the advent of our technology, communication is different. So I wanted to touch upon that as well.
Another theme in the movie is that parents are not their children, and children are not their parents. So the son of this very wonderful and great-souled man who died for what he believed in is kind of broken-spirited and is always sort of putting his head under the hood of a car in order to escape. But his wife, played by Angela Bassett, really takes on the fights of the man, of her husband's father. Meanwhile, the sons of the sheriff who covered up this murder are also very different people from their father.
Absolutely. I feel like we learn a lot from our parents, and I'm from a mixed marriage, and part of the reason why I told this story was because of my experience in Europe until I was 5 years old, and then coming to America. My brother and I never really saw color at all, and it worried my mother on one particular day in Germany when the African delivery man came to the door with the groceries, and we opened the door and started screaming, Schwarze, Schwarze, Schwarze. We ran to the closet and we locked ourselves in, or tried to.
Oh, my goodness.
My mother realized, oh, my goodness, my children are not distinguishing between my dark, my mother's very dark skin. She's from Alabama, a little town called Wylam outside of Birmingham. And my father is Neapolitan, who's olive skin. And she said they don't really see the difference in between me and Giovanni. And that worried her. So she started to talk to us about color. Well, shortly thereafter, we came to America, and I realized that I was being treated much differently than I had ever experienced before. Not as a human being, but as something else that I, at that age, at five, I realized wasn't quite a commodity. Wasn't quite something that was good.
Where did you move to in the United States?
We moved to Cleveland, Ohio. And that was an area, my mother always told me it was outside of Shaker Heights, and I've come to realize Shaker Heights is a very rich area. When I went back there in 2001 with Paul Newman to do some political work, and I realized I didn't live in Shaker Heights. We lived outside of Shaker. Outside of Shaker Heights. But so part of the reason I made the film was to really exorcise some demons and really speak to not only the idea of the racist attitudes, but also the idea that you know, I have a 12-year-old now who is just getting into those teenage years, and she's really gravitating toward me as a parent. And I remember how close I've been to my mother and how much I've loved my father. But we aren't always particularly exactly who our parents are. And they hope for us that we'll grow, another generation will become smarter and have more than they have. But if we really cling to everything that our parents experienced, we may not be able to experience new things for ourselves. And part of the story is about that. It's also about redemption. And many times, one of my favorite scenes in the film is toward the end when Jack Herod's son says to him, you know, he calls him a nigger. And I think it's such a powerful moment. Because
this son of the bad sheriff,
yes,
is calling his own father
a nigger, because he says you're always thinking about yourself, you know, you're always feeling sorry for yourself, because the sheriff didn't solve the murder and he didn't get into the state house, he didn't become the mayor, and everything went wrong, and he blames it all on the niggers. And at that moment, you know, I think it's in a revelation for the audience to realize, you know, he says, do you think I like feeling this way? And his son says, what do you want to feel, Dad? He said, I want to feel something else. And there are a lot of people that walk around not able to step out of their own skin, and or the values that their parents put on them, or the way they grew up, or their peers, and change how they feel. And that moment in the film is so important to me, because once you voice that, you have the opportunity to look at the experience you're having and maybe live a different one. And it's never too late.
And seeing that reflected in a film or in art gives the viewer the opportunity to step outside themselves for that moment.
Absolutely. You know, I grew up in the middle. I was the monkey in the middle. I wound up in an all-Italian and black high school and really felt like I was at home when I got there.
Yeah.
And quickly realized I was on an alien planet, because, you know, worse than anywhere else I could have wound up.
Well, you're black and Italian, but you weren't at home there?
I was not at home there because I wasn't accepted. See, we want to be connected as people. People want to feel like they have friends and they have connection. Not only culturally, but also spiritually. You know, they want to know that they're in the right place. And you know, when you walk into a room and everyone turns around and looks at you because you're not the right color, you don't kind of feel right. You don't really want to stay there too long. It doesn't make you feel comfortable. So
we're talking to Giancarlo Esposito about the film Gospel Hill, which is part of the Santa Fe Film Festival. It's a special presentation tomorrow night at 8 o'clock at the Scottish Rite Temple. I mean, another thing that I like about the story Gospel Hill is that nobody is really good or bad. Everybody has flaws. Everybody has some redeeming virtue. The Angela Bassett character is pretty darn good. Not hard to find flaws in her, except she yells at her husband a little bit.
That's right.
But who wouldn't? No, I mean that husband. But
we actually, it's funny you mentioned that, because my editor and I, Tina, were sitting in the editing room, and Tina kept saying, well, she's too strident. She's strident here. She's strident here. She's strident here. And I said, well, you know, she's convicted. She has a conviction about her. And I love her character. It's one of my favorite characters because she has a driving force behind her that is about right. There were a couple of racist lines I took out of her mouth because I didn't want her to be perceived completely as a racist, but I did want the idea that you cannot like white people in this black neighborhood of Gospel Hill, you know, because it goes back to an old argument I used to have with Spike Lee, that as a black person, you can't be racist, because he said to me, you know, being a racist, racism is economic. And I said, Spike, if you're a hater, you're a hater, period. So I would guarantee that you're a racist. He hated me for that. We're good friends, but I could talk to him like that. So I said, it goes both ways. And yes, you said it. I didn't want to make a movie where everything was so cut and dried as you see often in movies.
Or black and white.
And even though that's exactly what we're talking about, I wanted to play against all of that. Because in real life, we all are flawed. We all have different... It's just like sitting down and hearing a bad joke about Polish people or Jewish people or Spanish people and laughing with the group, even if you don't quite agree. And not standing up and saying, you know, that's kind of derogatory. I mean, it is funny, but, you know, it just perpetuates the same feeling of stupidity, the old light bulb joke, all that stuff. I hate that stuff because I hate that we know it's not really right, but that we get a kick out of it and say it anyway. And then it plays into and perpetuates all the things that it makes us feel better somehow that we put down someone else. So I wanted to make a film where there really isn't that line drawn of right and wrong. There is the experience, and the experience is the most important part of it, and what we learn from it, and how we grow through it. Louis Buñuel in his films had an old man who walked through many, many scenes, had no lines, with a big, big sack on his back, just in the middle of the scene, with two people talking, like you and I talking now. And the guy would be walking through, and he would never explain it. And finally someone asked him what that was. Who was that guy that walks through all your frames of your movie? He says, that's me. That's you. That's all of us who are carrying our garbage around.
Our burden. Yeah.
And so I never forgot that. It was very powerful for me. So I wanted to make a film that was subtle and without a lot of violence. And that maybe if you found this pearl of wisdom in it, you'd enjoy it. And if you didn't, it would be good entertainment.
Well, and you know, it's funny to be watching this in Santa Fe because the golf course story is something that we deal with here where there's very little water and then... You know, they're building multiple golf courses and using water that we could otherwise use for things. And you know, it's not only the amount of water it uses, it's also the symbol of it. And so here we are watching something that happens in some southern town. You shot it in South Carolina?
We shot it in Rock Hill, South Carolina, which, oddly enough, I felt like this whole film was really guided from my inspiration of changing the story, cutting half the characters, making Paul Malcolm someone you see, and working with the original writer to preserve his intention. I felt like it was really terrifically guided. But the golf course story seems to be very prominent all across America. Because that seems to be, it's happened in many different places where they've just taken land to make these golf courses. And it's an interesting part of what played into shooting in Rock Hill. I went down there, walking down the street, and there was a place called McCrory's, which was like a five and dime store 40 years ago. And I saw a plaque that said, on this spot, the Friendship Nine sat in and created the Jail No Bail. Nine men from Friendship College. The college is no longer there, only the Arch. But these men created what was later to be used by Martin Luther King in his nonviolent protest for civil rights. It was Jail No Bail. They went to jail, got arrested, and they wouldn't take bail to tax the system. And when I saw that plaque, I went, oh my goodness, we're in the right place. We've got to shoot the movie here. We must shoot the movie here.
Interesting.
And I started to do research on Friendship College and these nine young students who sat in, and it was the beginning of the whole civil rights movement that not many people knew about. So we shot the film in Rock Hill, Fort Mill, and...
When was that incident?
That was back in 1961, 62. Really, really long time ago.
Very interesting.
Yeah, it's fascinating to find ourselves in that place, and it was a mill town. You know, Fort Mill, obviously, Rock Hill, and Chester. Chester's an old civil rights town. I mean, Civil War town. They shoot a lot of Civil War movies there. So these three towns were all mills there. They're all gone. So when I went there, there were no jobs there either. And people were banging on the door to work on the film. So I felt like this movie's a lot about no jobs. It's about America. It's about how we come together or not. And it's about moving forward. And so I knew I was in the right place shooting it.
I was thinking when watching the film about that famous Martin Luther King quote, the arc of history is long, but it bends toward justice. And watching the film, I mean, I think that's one of the big questions in the film. It's one of the big questions in life, is whether we're ever really making any progress.
It is a big question, and I do think that we are, if we're conscious. If we start to live our own lives and take the best and leave the rest from what our parents have given us and move toward a more a better understanding of who we are as people. What gets in our way is money, is the way we're governed, and we not feeling like we have a say in how we're governed to be able to contribute. If people don't feel like they can contribute and are important, then what is there about life that they feel comfortable with and connected to? So I agree. I think things do bend toward justice because it's a natural cycle to be just. People inside themselves want to be good. People are intrinsically good. I believe that. I have hope in the worst person, in the worst warmonger in our government who thinks that that's the way to keep our society moving economically and is afraid to try anything else. I have faith in even that person. Because
Dick Cheney, huh?
Yeah, you got it. I do, because they've just learned it a different way, and they just have to relearn it now. But we have to speak up and know that we have a voice, and I think that's starting to happen. I really do.
So this is your first. You've made many, many films. Probably everybody who's listening right now has seen you in one film or another over the years. This is your first time being director.
It is.
What was that like?
It's the most challenging thing I've ever done in my whole life. Truly, because you have to have all the answers. And I like to have a lot of choices, so I'll come to like the bakery here and I'll look at the breakfast menu for 20 minutes before I decide on what I want because there's so many wonderful things that I might be able to have here. And as a director, you have short time to make those decisions. And I fell in love with it for another reason, because this project was so clean and so pure to me and such a labor of love that the passion that I had for it allowed me to bring everyone to their best selves, to allow them to do their best work. What I quickly realized as a director is you have an idea and a vision, but you need many people to implement that and to help you with it. And the only way to get them to do that is to allow them to do their best work. But in order to do that, you have to be a collaborator. You can't be a dictator.
Right.
So...
Although I suppose there's a lot of different director styles in this world, some of which are more dictatorial and some more collaborative.
Well, some people are just absolutely so thorough that it's all mapped out before they get there. But then where is the surprise?
Right.
Where is the where is there room to be, what's the word?
Spontaneous?
Spontaneous. You don't leave any room for that. Now, granted, I saw a movie last night, and I think... But that was so specific, the Lord of the Rings film it was taken from a book and tried to film it as the book described it, because Tolkien actually did all the work in his descriptions and sketches and everything else. So Peter Jackson was very, very thorough in how he mapped that out. I'm sure that's a very different way of directing something. His imagination took him far in terms of his visuals, but that's a different way of making a film. I felt like I was very humble. My first film, so I said to people, look, I've never done this before as a director, so I want everyone's input and I want to know what your ideas are and I want to honor that. However, at the end of the day, the decision will be mine because I am the director. And I went from a 30-day schedule to a 20-day schedule on this film. And it was brutal.
That's pretty quick.
Oh, yes. Quicker than quick.
Yeah.
Flash. A flash of lightning.
Especially, you had so many... I don't know what it would have been like if you had twice the characters. You had a lot of characters in that movie.
Quite a few.
And a lot of stars.
Yes. Yeah. And stars create another interesting dilemma in that they've done it so many times and they have a little bit of, if it's not ego, they have insight into how they've worked with other directors. But the advantage I had was that I'm an actor. So I was able to leave space and give space to many of my star actors, and had difficult times with two or three of them when there were disagreements with each other about a scene or otherwise. I'll never forget Samuel L. Jackson. I had offered him the role of John Malcolm, which is really what I had seen him as playing.
The Danny Glover role.
That's right. And And I knew that he probably would not do it because I couldn't pay him the money he wanted, and it would take more time than he probably had. So my backup was to say, if you don't want to play that role, would you play Paul Malcolm? Who then, his name was Peter, and we had to change it. We couldn't get the name Peter. But you can recognize the biblical references to all the names, Jack, Herod, in the film as well. But anyway, I said to Sam...
I thought there was a Malcolm X reference.
Not really. Oh. Not really. And I'm glad Sam didn't want to. Sam is someone who is so huge on the star meter, and he's such an old friend of mine. It's a lot. He eats directors up. That's his reputation.
So what happened?
He eats you up and spits you out. Well, I wanted him to play a scene a little differently. We shot the whole movie in June. We got to August, and we had not shot Samuel L. Jackson. So I went to Los Angeles. We had 2 days. I asked him to schedule in for his shooting on the Sony back lot, and he wound up giving me 1 day. And I had a scene where I wanted him to be less jokey and a little deeper, a little more dropped. And I went to him and I said, can we just make the pace a little bit different and try to just make this a little bit more serious? And he just glared at me. His eyes got wide and he looked at me and didn't say a word, just that intimidating look. And I just nodded my head and I walked away. And I said, you know, roll camera. And we did the take again and he did it worse, which I expected. Then I didn't go over to him at all. I cut in the middle of the take. And I said, okay, settle and action. We did the take a third time. He gave me exactly what I asked for.
Isn't that interesting?
You know, but my mother taught me years ago that you get more with sugar than you do with salt. So I thought, you know, just be gentle and be understanding. And I was also taught as an actor, if you do your worst acting school of acting, it's a good thing because you get it out of your system. You know, you just be bad, be horrible on a take. Act absolutely what your mind's eye would think is the worst acting you could ever do, and then it's out of your system, and then you leave room to rebuild.
I think that's true in probably any medium. It's true in art and photography and all of that. You'd make a million sketches, you throw them out, leaves room for the next thing.
Exactly. And part of what's wonderful about acting is the rehearsal process. And you don't do that a lot in film. On stage,
right.
You do. I've done a lot of theater. So.
Right. Well, I wanted to ask you, before we go, how are we doing right now in both in theater and in film in terms of giving decent roles to black actors? I remember 20 years ago, was it called Hollywood Shuffle, this movie?
Yes, Robert Townsend, great movie.
The black acting school, yes. Where they taught people how to play thugs and stuff like that. How are we doing now?
I think we're doing very well. I do. I think that there are opportunities now for black actors that have changed. And some would say, not at all. I still see, you know, the comics doing the same old black jokes that they did years ago. But I do see that we have some really... Samuel L. Jackson is in the Guinness Book of World Records as being one of the... Forget black or white, one of the highest grossing actors of all time, which I think is a wonderful breakthrough to have. I think that Denzel is doing roles that are very different now. But they're only a handful, and that's the unfortunate part. You know, they're only a handful of working actors in general who make their living completely from acting, and there are only a handful of African-American actors who are considered at the top of their craft. And
I mean, but are they playing, you know, I guess I could think of some examples, but you know, thoughtful, intelligent, reflective roles?
It's beginning, well, in general, are we making thoughtful, intelligent, reflective films? You know, but I do think there is more of an opportunity for cross-cultural or multicultural casting, as they've called it, which is that those phrases are not being used as much. But yes, the more thoughtful roles are coming to African-American actors. Look, this year I did a Tennessee Williams play called Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. And that was a wonderful breakthrough with Debbie Allen, Terrence Howard, James Earl Jones, Felicia Rashad. Now, you know, the playwright never wanted this play to be done by anyone but a Southern white cast. And I understood it when I read the play again. And it's a play I've always admired and loved because it's a play that's not about race, it's about family. And it's a fantastic piece of literature in general. However, for years and years and years, there's never been any opportunity for anyone other than a white cast to do this. And Tennessee Williams was really a profound writer. He wrote a lot of curse words into this play that weren't allowed to be done either because Elia Kazan in the original 1955 production said, you know, I won't do this if you keep these curse words in. salty language it was referred to. Well, James Earl Jones has been wanting to do this play for 20 years, and when finally the executor to his estate, who would not allow the play to be done in any other way, passed away, the rights were acquired, and we had an African-American cast doing the play. Oddly enough, three plays this year on Broadway in 1955 were on Broadway at the same time. Little Ham, Country Girl, and Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. All were on Broadway this year, all starring African-American actors, some mixed casts. So
that's amazing.
It's amazing. So there has been a leap and a jump. If the material reflects a story that is shared, not by any one race, by a great writer, but it's shared, it's similar, it's connective, it's understood. And so Cat on a Hot Tin Roof was a big hit, and we had a wonderful time. Country Girl with Morgan Freeman and Frances McDormand was also, and Peter Gallagher was also a wonderful hit, all limited runs. And then Little Ham with Ipatha Murkison as Lola. So, you know, I think acting is a way to transcend, and certainly filmmaking is a way to really transcend many things that we live in our lives and show people a heightened and different reality. But it can also show people how we live and how we connect and where we're at. So I do think there are some really strong inroads being made in terms of black actors, African-American actors, doing roles that they'd never have the opportunity to do.
Giancarlo Esposito is the director, producer, and lead actor in the film Gospel Hill. It's screening as a special presentation of the Santa Fe Film Festival at 8 o'clock tomorrow night, Saturday night, at the Scottish Rite Temple. You can find out more about the film at gospelhillfilm.com. It was the winner of the best film at the Fort Lauderdale Film Festival, and it's going to be distributed by 20th Century Fox.
Well, yes, it will be. Yes, I'll say that. I'll pray that. Well, they have the DVD rights, so it'll be on DVD by 20th Century Fox and will be distributed more than likely in combination with 20th Century and Future Films.
Is there going to be there's a theatrical release coming up after the festival circuit?
We don't have a date yet, but there is. I've been on the phone every day to secure that. It's a very long story, but it's looking very positive today that we'll be releasing probably in April or March.
Giancarlo Esposito, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
What a pleasure, Mary Charlotte. Thank you.
We're going to take a break right now. Robert Knott is on deck. Please stay tuned. I'd like now to welcome Robert Knott. He is the associate editor of the Pasatiempo Friday Arts Supplement in the Santa Fe, New Mexican, and he is with us here every Friday speaking of the arts. Robert, it's so nice to see you.
It'd be so nice to see me. How you doing?
I'm fine. I have screened 27 films for the Santa Fe Film Festival. We have interviewed 15 people, or more than 15 people, but we've talked about 15 movies in the last week. We haven't done anything but films, and I'm going to be going to more films this weekend. This is my favorite week. I shouldn't say that, but it's one of my favorite weeks of the Radio Cafe because we do all film festival.
I know.
It's so awesome.
You look downright Pentecostalian, so I'm
Pentecostalian?
Yes. We'll talk mostly movies.
Whatever you mean by that is so obscure that I can't even begin to imagine. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, let's mention a few non-film stuff. In fact, Fine Arts for Children and Teens has a winter 2008 student art exhibit. They've been working with teens and kids in the school system and outside the school system, trying to help them express themselves through art. The exhibit goes up at City Hall tonight. That's on Lincoln Avenue. Actually, late afternoon, 4 to 6 p.m., before the Santa Fe Film Festival parties, so head over there. It's free. The show's going to stay up through the end of January. I am going to go by and take a look at it. Santa Fe City Hall downtown. Fact, go get them. Cover story in the Pasatiempo by Doug Fairfield is on the Baca Street Holiday Art Tour. Ding, dong, ding, dong. It's over on Baca Street off Sirius Road. Dozens of galleries, 5 to 9 p.m., runs through December 7th. So you got a weekend of this stuff. Page 40 in the Pasatiempo is the story. Lots of beautiful stuff. It's a local, not Canyon Road, art walk. No offense to Canyon Road, because they have a lot of galleries opening up there tonight. Claudia Mara on Canyon Road has paintings by David Bowers. Hi, Claudia. Hi, David Bowers. Ernesto Mayan's gallery is in its 30th season. They've got some great watercolors and paintings up there in prints.
30 years
of
a gallery.
That's
so cool.
Road. I haven't been in there in a while to see him, but they're having an opening this afternoon, 3 to 6. Canyon Road Fine Art at 621 Canyon Road has a group holiday show. And there's a lot of downtown stuff, too. It's the first Friday Palace Avenue walk. So there's Manitou Galleries, Patina, Peterson Cody, and I know there's another one, probably Peyton Wright, maybe. They're all, pardon me, I got the sniffles all of a sudden. I didn't before. They're all having the Palace Avenue walk tonight, so head on down. There are lots of visual art stuff to do tonight. And if you want theater, I'll run through this as quickly as I can. I Hate Hamlet. It's a hilarious comedy. Santa Fe High School putting it on. Joey Chavez, one of the best directors in town, at the helm. Opens tonight, 7 o'clock at the Santa Fe High School Theater on Yucca Road. Really cheap to get in. Phone number, 467-2970. Joey knows his comedy. It'll probably be pretty good. A Little Shop of Horrors up at Great Hall, Peterson Student Center, 984-6000. Opens tonight at 8 o'clock. And you can go downtown when your life gets messed up. You go downtown. That's a great song. I love that show. That plant eats people. It comes from this old movie I saw on TV a long time ago. And the guy gets mad, so he hires this huge... Well, never mind. We'll talk about that later.
I didn't even say anything.
meanwhile, Teatro Paraguas at El Museo Cultural de Santa Fe has Las Apariciones de Nuestra Señora de Guadalupe.
The Apparition of Our Lady of Guadalupe.
Cuento de un encuentro entre, como se dice, Juan Diego y Nuestra Señora, 7:30 p.m. tonight, El Museo Cultural, runs through 2 weeks. Carmela Gonzalez directing. Phone number 473-0143. And George Orwell's 1984, if you want something that's kind of scary. Santa Fe Performing Arts Young Adult Ensemble, directed by Charlotte Fox, presents the three-act play, 7 o'clock tonight. Armory for the Arts runs through the weekend and next. 984-1370. Two more to mention. Stay with me. Evening of Solo Performances, Project Life Stories, is doing this tonight at 8 o'clock at the Rail Yard Performance Center. That's where people do original monologues of their life experiences. 986-3441. And finally, for dance, jazz, ballet, theater, swing, and sweets. Moving People Dance Company took the Nutcracker and made it nutty. They added all this swing stuff. There's antics and shtick, and the Sugar Plum Fairy becomes the Sugar Rum Fairy. It's at the New Mexico School for the Deaf's James A. Little. Opens tonight at 7 p.m. Here's the phone number, 438-9180. And I wrote about this. I also wrote about Nuestra Señora in today's Pasatiempo. Okay, now what?
Well, Santa Fe Film Festival.
Oh, great. Let's go.
There's a lot of amazing films, and Lord knows I haven't seen them all. I've only seen 27 of them, but I have some picks. Do you have any picks from the film festival?
Well, as a matter of fact, in today's Pasatiempo, we have 10 picks of various films various writers saw. I probably saw about 25 this year.
Really?
And I probably...
You see more and more every year, both of us.
Yeah, I probably liked... Because there's always some that just you don't like, and we don't have to mention them. They don't work for some reason. What I have, one good thing just on the side is, I'm seeing hardly any bad technical movies anymore, where the lighting's terrible or the sound's terrible. That stuff's gone by the wayside. They all seem to be competently done technically, and that's a nice step up.
That is indeed.
I don't know, there's five or six I really liked. I thought the
Which
documentary
ones?
About George Bush's hometown, Crawford.
Yes, Crawford. That was a good movie. We talked about that on this show.
The Cake Eaters, directed
Haven't
by...
Haven't seen that.
Yeah, and I just forgot her name. Mary Stuart must be, I want to say, oh, Mary Stuart Masterson. She directed it, and it's got the young girl, Kristen Stewart, who's currently a big thing in Twilight. I liked very much the Western Shoot First and Pray You Live, shot here locally.
Mm-hmm.
Goofy Spaghetti Western.
Is that a
good
movie?
I thought it was just pretty damn good.
Well, Spaghetti Western means it was made in Italy.
Well, it's somewhat of an homage to Spaghetti Westerns. I liked Stupid Teenagers Must Die, but you know what? You better be a teenager or a teenager mentality.
Or a teenager at heart, like you and me.
Or like 80s horror movies, because it's cheap and cheesy. It's at Warehouse 21 tonight. And for people like you, Wiener Takes All, a dogumentary is certainly
a dogumentary.
With a little
That was
wieners.
Very cute. It was
yes,
a cute movie.
Yes, that's a good way to put it. There's a few I haven't seen. Did you see This American Gothic?
No, I haven't seen that.
Doug Fairfield liked that one. I didn't see Torn from the Flag, which Jonathan Richards liked. About the Hungarian Revolution of 1956. If you had to pick a couple favorites, what would they be?
Well, I liked 222, which we talked about on this film. That is a heist movie. And as I've said on the day that we talked about it, I'm not really that into crime movies, but this is a character-driven movie, and it's so well done. And I actually met last night at one of the film festival events, the director and producer and a couple of cast members and the cinematographer are all here, and another cast member is coming. And it's just a terrific movie, and it's so well done and so suspenseful.
Is Mick Rossi in town, the guy that plays the
yeah.
lead and co-wrote it?
And he's terrific.
I think we're in agreement about this.
He's a great, the two of them, and this director.
The acting is terrific.
Is a very young man. He's 27 years old. And terrific acting. So that's a good movie if you want a narrative.
9 o'clock Saturday at Regal.
At Regal?
DeVargas.
De Vargas.
I didn't get to finish that, sorry. We call them, possibly call them all, it's a Regal Cinema, so we call them Regal De Vargas, Regal 14.
Oh, okay.
But it's at De Vargas, 9 o'clock Saturday. I'm in total agreement with you. Slight criticisms about it getting a little off track here and there, but really a good film. It kept me riveted.
Yeah,
and
it
it's good acting.
It's very, very good acting, and it's all about character. So that was one. In terms of narrative films, there's another narrative film that I thought was absolutely stunning, which was called M, just the letters E-M, as in Emily.
I didn't see it.
Oh, my goodness.
Tell me more.
It is a love story about two very young people in their 20s who fall deeply in love. The woman has mental illness. She's bipolar. And it's basically, I mean, love doesn't conquer all when somebody is mentally ill, but they try. And the thing that's so beautiful about it is that it's just continually understated throughout the whole thing. Nobody is screaming and yelling. Nobody's throwing, you know, anvils through windows or anything like that. The editing of it is like a French movie. It is like one of those beautifully conceived and emotionally honest French movies that we almost don't know how to make here, and some American made a movie that has that quality. It's an independent movie, and it's just
cast and all that.
Yeah, and it's beautiful, and I saw it with some friends, and it really led to a lot of discussion about what was presented in it, and the people who play the two leads are so beautiful together, and we talked about on the air the other day about how they actually looked at 1,400 different actors before they found those two that they could cast together, and they're made for each other.
Well, you're making me want to go see it. And according to the schedule of the Santa Fe Film Festival catalog, 6:30 tonight at De Vargas and 8:15 Sunday at De Vargas, and it plays with the short movie Ark of a Bird, which I did not see.
I haven't seen that. And then in terms of narrative movies, I also liked Selfless, which was a thriller about identity theft made by the Pander Brothers, who I also had on the air, and they are people who made their name in comic books, in graphic novels.
That's right.
This is their first movie, and it's very well done.
And aren't they doing a comic book signing as well?
Mm-hmm. That's tomorrow from 12 to 3 at True Believers Comics on Cirrus Road, I believe.
Now, did you see Louisa May Alcott? I did.
No.
Okay, that's one night.
And then in terms of documentaries, I've got three picks. And, you know, my picks are just among the movies I've seen. There's so many movies I haven't seen, which are probably equally good. But I loved Squeezebox, which was a documentary about a drag queen rock club in New York. And it's hilarious, and it's outrageous, and it's just really well done.
I saw that as well.
Did you like it?
Crazy and bizarre. And, yeah, I lived in New York, and I can't say I ever went to that place, but that certainly gives
I wish I'd gone to that place.
Paints a picture of, you know, days gone by there.
Yeah. And Under Our Skin, I would say of all the movies that people need to see, Under Our Skin is it's one of the top movies of the festival in terms of get your bum over there. It's about Lyme disease, but it is so fascinating, so well done, so emotional, and so, I mean, who knew that Lyme disease, I certainly didn't, was riddled with politics. It's a disease where there's a whole, it was like HIV 25 years ago.
I know they're suggesting that it's just as serious as that, and that's playing, just so you know, at 5:45 Saturday. I'm trying to give the time. You can pick up a catalog at the Forum on the College of Santa Fe.
Okay, that's right.
You can pick up a catalog at the box office, 519 Cirrus Road. I'm a big booster of the Santa Fe Film Festival, but I am hearing from people that a lot of things are sold out, which is nobody's fault. I'm also hearing there's some confusion occasionally at the box office, and sometimes people aren't always that nice. I don't know if that's true, but if anybody, you're hearing this, you're
I haven't seen a non-nice person
Be extra sweet and nice and try to help people the best you can.
I mean, the Santa Fe Film Festival, it's still, you know, it's fine. Every year they're doing better. Every year they're finding their way a little bit more, but it's not like an institution that's been around for 25 years.
Good
I mean,
point.
This is a
9 years.
Yeah, I mean, it's a wonderful festival, and every year we learn. There's one more. I have one more documentary pick, which is called Playing Columbine.
I didn't see that one.
And it's about video games, and it totally changed and opened my mind about video games. I'd never thought about them before. I just had sort of received wisdom of what other people said. And it is a collection of interviews with some of the most intelligent and thoughtful people talking about interactive media. I could have never.
And how it influenced things like Columbine? Is that
well,
why the
no.
title
I mean,
ties
it's it? It, what happened was there was a young man who made the film who was living in Colorado. He was a high school student himself when the Columbine massacre happened. It affected him very deeply. He was a skinny little kid who was getting bullied himself in high school, and he eventually made a video game called Super Columbine Massacre RPG! Exclamation point, in which the players, and it's like an old sort of Nintendo, real low-res video game, in which the players put themselves in the position of the Columbine shooters, and they have information about them and photographs and what their lives were like and so on. And he got slammed for it, and so he ended up talking about, he ended up making this movie about all the different points of view on video games, but also this whole thing of what does it mean to play a role in a game, and what is the social possibility of that for actually learning and for empathizing and for opening up a subject. And you know, a lot of the people who saw this movie, I mean, a lot of the people who played this video game learned more about the Columbine Massacre playing the video game than they had through reading the media. Well, so it's really,
you're making me want to go see it, and it's a great explanation. I'm sorry I didn't see it, but it's playing, again, just so you know, 2:15 today, Warehouse 21, and 7:15 Sunday, Warehouse 21. That one sounds terrific. It's part of the Southwest Showcase. It's playing with a short movie I saw called The Plain Truth, which is memories of, about 25 minutes long, memories of people who lost loved ones on the Air France Airbus 320.
Oh, right. I've heard about that film.
And it's just a really nice... you just get the interviews of these people and how they miss, and it works really well for a short film. I don't know if it could be expanded, but it's playing with that. So it sounds like between us, we're picking a lot of the same films. I don't know if there's stuff yet we seriously disagree on, but we'll find out, I guess.
Wonderful movie also, a short movie, 30 minutes, called Tangji in Love, which is a gay men in Beijing, China, talking about their lives. A nice movie called Jolene. Did you see that?
No.
That airs tonight.
Hey,
I mean, that
Jolene.
Screens tonight. And... what else? Oh, Airplay, the rise and fall of rock radio.
I was just about to ask about that one.
That was a terrific movie.
Steve Terrell wrote it up in his column, and it's going to be something that people that like rock and roll radio like. Now, we haven't talked much about the tributees. Have you seen any of them yet?
I don't know.
Howard Shore, the composer. They're going to play Lord of the Rings. Vilmos Zsigmond, the cinematographer, who, among other things, shot Close Encounters of the Third Kind and McCabe and Mrs. Miller, a 1971 Robert Altman picture.
And I want to tell you about one more.
Is actor James Cromwell, who's here to be around for L.A. Confidential, which is a terrific picture.
There's one more film that we talked about that I wanted to mention, which was Milking the Rhino, which is about community-based conservation in Africa, which is all about saving wildlife through actually engaging rather than ignoring the communities around them. So that's cool. And that was made by a Santa Fe filmmaker named Jeannie McGill. And that is playing at the DeVargas 3 tomorrow night at 7 o'clock.
It's just a great choice. I didn't see a lot of stinkers this year, and that kind of made me feel good.
Oh, I saw some stinkers.
I saw a couple that were dull, which I won't mention. They just didn't go.
No,
movies
we will
have
not
to
mention
move,
them.
But we'll talk about them off the air.
Yeah.
But I think they're all sincere, and it's great to meet the filmmakers. I was at the opening night party. I popped by the happy hour last night. I'm going to go to some panel talks today. I'm probably going to go see a movie tonight, and I'm probably going to go to the Or house party this evening. So if there's somebody flipping
that's
off the
really,
railing about
that's really the main thing is the parties.
No, it's not the main thing. You just put it's like the sprinkling of the cake after you made it.
The sprinkling of the cake?
Yeah, after you make the cake, you sprinkle on the, what do you call that stuff?
Are you saying it's icing on the cake?
No, on top of the icing.
The jimmies?
Well, like my mother used to put on top of the icing like...
sprinkles.
Sprinkles, that's what I'm saying. I'm tired of the icing on the cake. I'm trying to find a new metaphor to fit the analogy of the parable I'm talking about.
Gee. Well, have at it.
So what time is it?
Oh, it is 8:52.
How did the time go by so quick just talking about movies?
I don't know how that happened. But one more movie. But Lucy Massey Phoenix made a film called Winter Soldier in 1972, and she has made a film called Don't Know, We'll See, the work of Karen Carnes. And it is about a potter who is working today, and it's apparently a great movie. I have not seen it yet. I was trying to find the film and get her on the air. Didn't make it, but that's a movie that... I would guess is really worth seeing. It's tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock and then Sunday at 3 o'clock at Tipton Hall at the College of Santa Fe.
Great.
Good filmmaker.
A couple of non-film stuff. Monday night at the Santa Fe Art Institute. Oh, here we go. Filmmaker Alfredo Jarz, J-A-A-R, talking about tourism, migration, and exile.
And I will be talking to him on Monday morning here on the cafe.
6 o'clock Monday, Tipton Hall, small fee to get in. there's an all-ages swing dance that night if you want to swing.
And also, Alfredo Jarr is teaching a workshop about art and social action from Tuesday through Friday, and there's scholarships available at the Santa Fe Art Institute, 424-5050.
Great. I also want to mention, I don't hope it's not conflict of interest, but Steve Terrell, a political reporter for the Santa Fe New Mexican and a very good music writer for the Paso Tiempo.
And a DJ for KSFR.
He certainly is. He's going to be talking at 10 on Wednesday the 10th at 11:30 on Tales from the 2008 campaign trail, because as you know, he's been covering Governor Richardson. He's bid for president and up to whatever's happening now. And Steve's a pretty savvy guy. I have a feeling he's going to be a really interesting speaker. 11:30 at the Hilton. You got to pay to get in, but donations are requested also of linens, gift cards, and bus passes for the Esperanza Shelter for Battered Families. And I believe Hosho Trio is going to perform some African music. 11:30 Wednesday. You need a phone number. Here it comes. 982-9766. I hope to be there. Be nice to see you there. Be nice to see you out and about instead of always seeing you in the
I'm
back of,
about
you know,
already.
Evangelos,
what do you want from
behind
me?
Bars and stuff like that.
What?
Never mind that. What else?
I don't know.
Feast of Carols and Choruses. I think starting next week we'll start talking about the Christmas stuff. But just so you know, Thursday night, Santa Fe Symphony Brass Quintet and Chorus and the Santa Fe Women's Ensemble hook up to do some holiday music of Handel, Bach, and Gabriele, as well as a sing-along of carols. And let me tell you, some of the carols I know are pretty pretty. I'd sing along with them. I have to do a lot more with that. But anyway, 7 o'clock Thursday night. Doors open at 6:15 at the Cathedral Basilica de Santa Francis of Assisi, which I guess is still undergoing some sort of exterior repairs. 983-1414, that is free.
Hey, how about this? Photos with Santa Claus.
Oh,
Santa Claus is going to be at Petco on December 6th and 13th, and at PetSmart on the 6th and 7th, and then 13th and 14th and 20th and 21st from 11 to 4, and the proceeds benefit the Spay-Neuter Fund of Felines and
Santa
Friends.
Claus.
And all pets are welcome, but they have to be on leashes or in carriers.
But
and
do they get posed with Santa, the animals?
Yeah. So I'm looking at a picture of Santa himself with this adorable pit bull or something.
How come Santa never poses with his reindeer? We never see photos of that.
Are you kidding? I've seen photos of that. But they don't go to Petco because they can't fit into the they can't fit all the reindeer into Petco.
I don't know, not on the websites I check out, which is Sexy Sirens of the 60s. Phew, Aunt Margaret. I'm glad we had the discussion about her last time.
Oh, God.
I was just thinking about her again the other night.
Oh, yeah? What were you thinking?
Well, for some reason, she didn't make the top 25 list of GQ's 25 Sexiest Women in Cinema. I looked at it several times, including the pictures, because that helps to get to the text. They did pick some great ones, though. Sophia Loren, Bridget Bardot, and I love those older women. They chose Ursula Andress. I'm delighted. Melanie Griffith. I'm happy with that. They chose a lot of mature women who have experience and curves and everything. But Anne Margaret wasn't in there. I'm sort of bewildered, baffled, and frankly antithesized. I can't even come up with a solution for that.
Antithesized, huh?
Yeah, so I think Anne Margaret should have been put in there. She's probably the best actress of the lot, although Sophia's pretty good.
Sophia Loren, she's a very good actress.
Yeah, who else was in that 25? Oh, Jane Birkin was in there. And let me see. I know somebody else was. Oh, Halle Berry, which suits me just fine. She looks pretty good in a suit, too. Bet she looks good out of one. Hey, what time is it?
It's 8:57. You've got 1 minute left.
Oh, I'm going to start being good from now on because it's the time of year when Santa Claus starts paying attention. And I don't want to be on his naughty list like it was the last past, you know, 38 years.
Dude, you have to
life.
You have to be good the whole year.
What do you mean?
If Santa Claus is judging whether you're naughty or nice, you have to be nice.
I got to start on January 1st?
Yes.
My mother used to tell me around Thanksgiving. Now you start being good because that was always the month I was good. You mean to this is a fine thing. I'm nearly 50 years old. My mom double-crossed me. I got to be good since January 1st.
You have to start on now. Well, you have to start on December 26th. You have to be good the whole year.
I can't even get the week between Christmas and New Year's.
All right, I'll give you that.
Be naughty. It's my birth week and everything. I can't even go out and hang out in my birthday suit.
Okay, you can be naughty. And we'll talk about it on the air.
I don't mind inferring stuff, but we don't put that stuff out there. If you're going to write about it, find another name for me in your memoirs.
Let's infer it. Go ahead, infer.
Wait, I'll tell you about the collection of stories I'm working on.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. You're going to love it. Oops, I just hit my mic. Sorry. So it's been great to see you. Santa Fe Film Festival. Do we need to give them a website? SantaFeFilmFestival.com. Do we need to give them a phone number?
Sure.
The box office is... 988-7414. No, pardon me. Phone ticket orders, 989-1495. They have two phone numbers, and they think it's okay to have two phone numbers, and they confuse everybody.
Well, there's also these newsprint flyers all over town that you can pick up that have the listings of the movies in them, and there are these beautiful, glossy program books with the movies in them in even more detail. There's parties, there's panels, there's screenwriting events, all sorts of things.
People to see, music to play. Remember when Anne Margaret sang that, Bye Bye Birdie?
No, I don't. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. KSFR streams live on the web at ksfr.org. We are podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show whenever you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services, and you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. Thanks to Marilyn LeBlanc for engineering today, and thanks to all the engineers at KSFR for bearing with me in this crazy week of the Santa Fe Film Festival. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, Jazz a la Carta. Robert Knott is the associate editor of the Pasatiempo, Friday Arts Magazine in the Santa Fe New Mexican, which is one of our daily papers here in Santa Fe. He's with us just about every Friday speaking of the arts, and he's singing.
There's gonna be places to go, people to see, music to play, everything for you and me, 'cause life's a ball, 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 and baby, you know it.
Life's a ball, ball, ball.
And it's out there just waiting for you. You're alive, girl, so please let me show it. I got a lot of living, an awful lot of living. Lots and lots of living, some taking and some giving. I've got a lot of living. I'll see you around.
Hasta la vista. Wonderful to see you, Robert. I'll see you next week.
I'll see you at the party.
Excellent.
Say it, say it.
Ready?
Yeah.
Ciao.